is the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be pod smacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
Here I am, baby. Yeah, baby. It is the 19th of October. Episode number 191. If you are downloading from iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Plus, Google Play, Player FM, your Alexa. Oh, I shouldn't have said her name. Good, she didn't hear me. I have one in my studio, by the way. She's right over. Right over there. If you can watch me on Liberty One TV, you'll know what I'm talking about. Welcome to the show, guys. Glad to have you here. A lot of stuff to get to. Want to thank all of you for listening on the Podcast Radio Network, podcastradionetwork.com. The show is featured at 5 o'clock Central Standard Time, 6 o'clock Eastern. And, of course, on Liberty One TV, new time slot, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central. That's prime time, baby. That is prime time. And the audience is growing. The audience is growing. And I really appreciate you watching no matter where you are. I'd love to hear from you. CarsonOnTheRadio@gmail.com. CarsonOnTheRadio@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. I want to know where you're listening, where you're checking it out, what you're thinking, whatnot. Because I'm having a good time. I hope that you are enjoying the radio program. And if you're not a member yet of LibertyOneTV.com, right up there, do it. It's only $10 a month. It's only $99 a year. That's 33 cents a day. That's the change you get back when you buy a cup of coffee. Like at McDonald's, that's the change you get back. 33 cents, you're not going to miss 33 cents. You got 10 times that amount in the drink holder in your car. Isn't that where you put the change? That's where I put it. One of the reasons why this glorious enterprise exists is because there are so many people who are being locked out of traditional media, social media as well, because they have conservative views. There is a war on conservative speech in this country. It is happening on campus. It is happening in the public square. And it is happening on social media. I have proof. Twitter has removed the ability for conservative users to send out automated tweets using a service created by the Patriotic Journalist Network, PJ Network, PJ Net. This is according to Slate, and Slate is left to center. The app helped users build tweets with pre-written text and pictures that allowed them to post the tweets on a consistent schedule, even multiple times an hour, which could allow users to reach an audience of hundreds and thousands of accounts. Before Twitter removed the ability for users to post using the feature, the group of users were able to hold hashtag rallies where members coordinate with each other to send out masses of tweets on a particular topic. That's gone now for this network. Twitter decides the rules, we don't. We are a guest at their dinner table, proclaims PJ Net founder Mark Prasik. Says if your account is suspended, you can't possibly be on the field of play waging the battle that we are in. Twitter has repeatedly banned conservative and libertarian users both permanently and temporarily from its platforms. Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos, Breitbart London editor Rasheem Kassam. We've got pro-Trump commentator Pizza Party Ben. Don't know that guy. You've got former Muslim and anti-female genitalia mutilation activist Shazia Hobbs. All received temporary or permanent bans from Twitter for their thoughts. They're owned by left-wingers, okay? Facebook and Twitter are owned by left-wingers. You are there at their mercy, to be quite honest. Now, if you are a millennial, you've never seen unemployment at this low a rate. Did you realize we've got the fewest jobless claims since 1973? It's working, folks. This guy with the orange face and the bad hair is kicking ass and taking names. Filings for unemployment benefits plunged last week to the lowest level since 1973, as workers affected by hurricanes and Irma and Harvey continued to return to their jobs. Jobless claims decreased by 22,000 to 222K, the lowest since March of 1973. Wow. Wow. You had the Dow above 23,000 yesterday. You've got 3% GDP growth in the second quarter of this year. They said it wasn't going to happen. Democrats said it wasn't going to happen. It was never going to happen. It happened within months. It happened within months. That's where that shadow is. That's the shadow. Okay, I get it. I've got a shadow here. I was wondering where that shadow on my face was. It covers up my face, which is a benefit for some people. Now, here, let's get into what's going on with Uranium One and the Clintons. Do you have a fan? You might want to move away because the SHIT just hit it. And it's going to get bigger and it's going to get uglier. This, according to the Daily Caller, Both the House and Senate are investigating whether the former president, Barack Obama's administration, used intelligence in a salacious Trump dossier as evidence before a federal surveillance court to obtain permission to spy on Donald Trump campaign aides and later his transition team. Now, listen to this. Here's what happened. Obama's Justice Department, the FBI, introduced these unsubstantiated material involving unsavory connections between Trump and Russia, brought it before the FISA court. All right? The FBI used the dossier to secure permission to monitor the communications of Trump associate Carter Page, based on U.S. officials briefed on the Russia investigation. Okay? The latest inquiries began October the 4th when the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence subpoenaed Fusion GPS. They're the company that did the surveillance. Okay? They've been asked to appear before the committee and turn over bank documents. Now, there was this... Fusion GPS was the company behind the unsubstantiated dossier, and it was authored by Christopher Steele, who was a former British MI6 agent. I'm trying to make this less complicated. He came up with some of the scurrilous things he said was that President Trump hired prostitutes to go into a hotel room in London where the Obamas had been and take a whiz on the bed. But this was enough for the Obama administration, even though everything was uncorroborated, everything was, it had errors, it was BS, but they used it before the FISA court, and the FISA court gave them the warrant they needed to surveil the Trump campaign. This flimsy excuse, this flimsy, unsubstantiated, uncredible report was enough for the Obama administration to use to spy on Donald Trump's campaign. Now, here's the other thing. They submitted the same dossier to courts in Great Britain, all right? What that did was it allowed an even stronger ability to wiretap, okay? Chuck Grassley pointed out that if the U.S. had assumed the British court and the Steele dossier were separate investigations, it could have made Justice Department arguments for wiretaps stronger. In effect, the separate British report could convince a FISA court an allied foreign intelligence agency had independently confirmed the FBI's allegations. So this guy, this dossier was turned over to British courts and American courts to make the argument for wiretaps even stronger. If the unsubstantiated dossier information was entered as verifiable information before a FISA court, the implications are staggering, former U.S. Attorney Joseph DeGeneva told Daily Caller. That would mean the Obama administration pursued a type of manipulation of intelligence data and false intelligence data to mislead a court. It's staggering in terms of its implications. That would mean the Obama administration, the possibility of the Obama administration might use the unproven allegations before a FISA court constitutes a crime of unbelievable dimensions. It requires the empanelment of a federal grand jury. Chuck Grassley added a new twist to the Steele dossier, and that was that reporting to British courts. So you've got this scurrilous report turned over to British courts, turned over to the FISA court here in the United States, used to wiretap Donald Trump, not only the campaign, but also the transition team. Donald Trump said Trump Tower, and he said it indelicately, Trump Tower had been bugged. He was right. He was right. It is absolutely staggering to me. Absolutely staggering to me. The depth to which the Obama administration stooped on a variety of issues. Eric Holder is a criminal. Jim Comey is a criminal. Loretta Lynch is a criminal. Thick as thieves, folks. Turns out the Obama administration knew the Russians were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, and extortion in order to gain control of U.S. atomic resources. We reported this yesterday, 2009. The Obama administration, the Justice Department, knew that there were all of these things going to try to get Russian company to get 20% of our uranium. They knew it was happening. Think about how the criminality of that. Knowing all of things were happening in 2009 and going ahead with the deal in 2010. Thick as thieves. Peter Schweitzer, of course, wrote about it, and Clinton Cash. I'm going to post my interview with Peter Schweitzer on my podcast. I interviewed him last year, and I will put that up. Just look up Rob Carson Show on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and all the other sites, and I'll put it up there. The Clinton Foundation got $145 million and a $500,000 fee for Bill Clinton for a single speech by individuals involved in the deal. People who were bribing, people who were laundering money. Eyewitnesses backed by documents of money laundering, blackmail, bribery by Russian nuclear officials, all aimed at growing Vladimir Putin's atomic energy business inside the U.S. in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The Bureau even flagged the routing of millions from Russian nuclear officials to cutouts and on to Clinton Inc. Hillary Clinton sat on the key government body that had to approve the deal, though now she claims she had no role in the deal with profound national security implications. Unbelievable. I said from the get-go, and you probably didn't know my show on the radio, but last year I said this entire Russia involvement in the elections was nothing more than a distraction from the truth. This. Let's move on to some other stuff. Let's talk about Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell has apparently developed kind of a verbal tic. Now, of course, we know that the NFL is not going to require players to kneel, or to stand, I should say, during the national anthem. By the way, I've got a new T-shirt up. New T-shirt up on tpublic.com/user/conservatees. You see it if you're watching right now. But if you haven't, if you're listening, tpublic.com/user/conservatees. It's like an NFL-looking logo, and it says, "If they don't stand, I won't watch. If they don't stand, I don't want you." You order right now, the T-shirt's only $14, normally $23. Okay? Order that. You can have it put on hoodies and all that stuff. But Roger Goodell, yesterday in a press conference, obviously feeling a little bit nervous, developed kind of a verbal tic and repeated a couple words ad nauseum. Here is the audio from that.
I tell you that our players are men of great character. They have a very deep understanding and tremendous knowledge of the issues that are going on in all of our communities. The players were very clear about how they felt about these issues.
It's coming
and
up.
How deeply they felt about these issues in our communities. Oh. These aren't really issues that are player issues or owner issues or community issues. Oh. They're issues that affect all of us in our communities. Yep. We wanted to work together to try to address these issues.
Now, in case you haven't figured it out right now, the words issues and communities.
Today, talking about the issues that our players have been trying to bring attention to about issues in our communities to make our communities better. There's nothing more important than trying to give back into our communities and make our communities better. Yeah. Relationships between our clubs, our players, our communities, the relationship between the players and our communities and our law enforcement mission. These are important issues for our communities. They're American issues. And those are the key issues. I would tell you, though, just on one other issue that can really make a difference in our communities in a positive way and to try to help and make differences in our community. Deal with the underlying issue, differences in our community, because this is a long-term issue. That's why we're trying to deal with those underlying issues. We're going to continue to work on these issues in the community. We'll address issues. I can't deal with hypotheticals right now. We'll deal with those issues as they come up. And the NFL really do care about their issues and what we can do to make the communities better. And that's the opportunity for us in our communities. Mm. What are the things in our communities that our players are expressing? Mm. And I think listening to our players, understanding our players, trying to address those underlying issues and making our communities better is where the real opportunity is.
Wow. He said issues and communities 45 times. 45 times. You know, I mean, I listen. I've got some verbal tics, and I have to, literally on my computer, it says no ums, no uhs, no lip smacking, and no you knows. You know the word, you know, when you say you know, and it's just, my son does like. My son does like, and you call him out, and you're like, buddy. I mean, you're literally saying like every two words. It's like so messed up. Sean Hannity, he says now. Listen to Sean Hannity show. Every other word is now. I'm surprised somebody hasn't told him, but you know, he's worth a lot of money. So he, you know, I'll work on it. Okay. I will work on it. Trust me. MSNBC's Katie Turr. Just missing that D. It just would be right at the end there. Katie Turr said it's silly to focus on standing for the national anthem. She was joined by New York Times Mark Leibovich. Leibovich is, of course, like so many leftists, saying that the kneeling and the president saying for the NFL players to stand is racist. No, it's not. The issue is standing with respect for the national anthem, and it just so happens a lot of black players are doing it. It's not because they're black. It's because the action they're taking, that's it. And this is, I'm just so damn tired of this crap. Just so tired of crying racism when there is no racism. Here's the exchange.
Over again, and I think what this football sort of kerfuffle shows is that he just loves nothing more than to hurl himself into the middle of the most raw and sensitive and delicate culture.
He speaks like us. He speaks about the things we care about. The American people are mad that the NFL players are not standing during the national anthem. That's why their ratings numbers are going down. 14% since, I believe, 2015. 7% since last year.
Issues, usually with racist.
Is it a culture war thing?
Race is a subtext. No, it's not, you idiot.
I think race is a big subtext here.
No, it's not.
They'll just rub every nerve raw. And
if they were all Asians, would he be racist against Asians?
Till everyone is really, really tired. And ultimately, I don't think people get smarter on these issues. I mean, yes, we should have a debate about whether, I mean, I think you could ask, you know, every American, do they believe in the flag standing for free speech and the First Amendment? Probably 90% would say, sure, absolutely. That's what our soldiers fought for. And then you would ask them, you know, should or must players stand for the national anthem? You know, maybe 60%.
Actually, 80% say that you should stand.
Say, yes, we would like them to. I mean, mandate, who knows what your word they would use. But yeah, I mean, again, this is a debate in which people say, okay, awareness is being stoked. I don't think awareness is such a holy grail here. I think ultimately...
Well, what are the players? Aren't the players trying to make something aware of something? Police violence, we heard now, equal pay for men and women.
I mean, this is not a terribly sophisticated debate, and I think... You know,
not a terribly sophisticated protest. In fact, it's kind of stupid because there's no finish line. There's no moment where, oh, okay, everything's fine now. That's the thing. There's no finish line.
The president is sort of leading it.
It's just kind of silly that we're talking about standing for the flag when we have so many terribly important issues to talk about right now.
That's the ultimate leftist distraction. There are so many more important things. Why are we talking about this?
And the president has so many big issues on his plates, so many things that he's trying to push through Congress.
Okay, whatever, Katie. Whatever, Katie, Turr. Turr. This is where the taking a knee during the pledge or during the anthem has jumped the shark into a giant pile of stupid. In a solidarity with the protests of by NFL players, members of the city council in Ann Arbor, Michigan, took a knee during their Pledge of Allegiance. You ever notice that? I mean, do you know how many people watch city council meetings on local access television? Zero. Okay. Zero. The only people who do monitor them are TV newsrooms, local TV newsrooms, and then they take sound bites from it. Councilmember Chuck Warpahoski explained why he did it and why it wasn't a disrespect in his opinion. I want to thank my colleagues who joined me in taking a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance today. When I grew up, I was taught to, when it was time to say my prayers, to kneel down. He explained, when I was in football, my coach wanted me to listen, or the team to listen. He'd tell us to take a knee, when, you know, take a knee when you want him to listen. Or if someone was hurt on the field and we wanted to pay attention and give that situation respect, as some of us had hoped and for some of us prayed that the injury wasn't too severe. People will argue that position is a position of disrespect, he added. For me, it is a position of great respect. For my part, taking a knee was the chance to give attention and hope and prayer that the words of the Pledge of Allegiance, blah, 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 liberty and justice for all would be fulfilled. There are beautiful... Shut up! Council member Sumi Kailasapathy nailed it! Explained her reason for taking a knee. For me, taking a knee is also showing solidarity with the group of people who have been doing this at the national level. Here's the thing. And this is the new spin. Taking a knee is like prayer. Taking a knee shows reverence. It's like in the beginning of The Lion King when all the animals go like this and the baboon holds the baby lion up in the air. Maybe that's kind of what it is. You may think all of those things. And in every other situation, you'd probably be right. But it is protocol to stand for the national anthem. Okay? Taking a knee. You can say all you want, and you can try to spin it. No, no, no. It's reverence. Hillary Clinton said it shows reverence. No, no. It might, in your mind, show reverence, kids. But it's not protocol. It's not protocol. The other day, I saw a kid at the Tomb of the Unknowns taking a knee when the soldiers came out. If you've ever been to the Tomb of the Unknowns, they change the guard. I think it's every 20 minutes or so. And it is a powerful moment. And there is absolute silence. And there, everyone stands. And this punk took a knee. That is not a sign of reverence. That is a sign of disrespect. There are protocols. There are appropriate things. The way you fold a flag has to be the way you fold a flag according to military tradition. You don't wad it up. You don't fold it like a fitted sheet. The protocol is that you fold and fold and then triangulate. That's how you do it. And it is, regardless of what you say, it is disrespectful to do otherwise. There you go. My thoughts on it. Linda Bloodworth Thomason, the creator of Designing Women, very good friend with the decades with Bill and Hillary. She used to stay in the Lincoln bedroom. There's pictures of her and Hillary jumping on the bed. I can only assume it ended there. She admits that she not only knew of producer Harvey Weinstein's predations, she also warned top-level Democrats about him. Imagine that. Buried deep within a Hollywood Reporter guest column, she said, I confess to having no problems warning at least three top-level Democrat operatives against allowing Harvey Weinstein to host political fundraisers, a warning that evidently fell on deaf ears. She says she was a member of the Let's Bring Harvey Weinstein Down Lunch Club and appears to express some disbelief towards those who, despite knowing him for decades, now announce they had no idea what was going on. How difficult is it to add two and two to come up with the Clintons and the Democrat Party knew? And I said this, of course they knew. Of course they knew. Certainly, we have no reason to doubt Bloodworth Thomason. At least three top-level Democrats knew and did nothing to stop Weinstein from becoming a major player and fundraiser within the party. He bundled and fundraised tens of millions of dollars. Bloodworth Thomason is also open about why high-powered men remain protected. She admits her feminism was tested by Bill Clinton's behavior when she was on the front lines defending him in the 90s. This is when you place ideology ahead of humanity. She said in this column, one of my best friends I will ever have and a man I dearly love, former President Bill Clinton, has certainly taxed my feminist conscience, but always without diminishing my affection. I even helped write his apology to the nation for his own sexual misconduct. Was sitting next to him when he delivered it. She also said there was an ominous moment in the column, an admission that these kinds of atrocities against women routinely go unreported and unpunished in the industry, in the entertainment industry. Well, it was happening in your political circles too, douche. And you decided you didn't want to do anything about it. you decided you still wanted to be Bill Clinton's friend, despite the trail of destruction he left behind him. 40 accusers now. 40 accusers saying that Harvey Weinstein assaulted him, assaulted them. It started out with Ashley Judd, and it did the shower thing, right? That was the shower thing. He would convince people to come in and watch him shower, like you want to watch this fat, tubby, unshaven, stinky Jewish guy. It's moved on to all sorts of other people. Lucia Adams, or Evans, I should say, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Rosanna Arquette. Coming up in a second, all of this, this covering up for a sexual abuser by Hollywood for years, they still feel like they have some sort of moral authority, and there's a new PSA about guns and against the NRA that I'm going to share with you in a second. Here's Howard Stern, of all people, last night on Jimmy Kimmel's show last night, talking about Harvey Weinstein.
Anybody hear this guy, Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I'm sorry, first of all, when did this guy have time to make movies? I don't know. I thought movie making was hard. Come on. This guy, this big fat guy, what does he think? He says to a woman, here's his standard move, according to all these women who've accused him. He goes, listen, I'm going to get in the shower. I want you to watch me nude. Now, I'm a man. If you saw me naked, you'd throw up. There is no girl on the planet that wants to see Harvey Weinstein naked and is going to get aroused. Who puts this logic together, right?
Okay, I mean, that's all funny and everything, you know. But that's how Howard Stern has made a living for the last 35 years. Getting women desperate for attention to strip off their clothes and do stupid crap on his show. And now that he's on, satellite radio, and he has a studio. He has them actually performing sexual acts in the studio, nude, completely nude, for his own pleasure. You know, whatever, Howard. I never got it. I mean, I just never understood how you could like that kind of filth. You know, not saying that I've been immune to pornography, but. I don't know. How could you look past the filth of the man and what he does and like him? I don't know. Whatever. I'm not an East Coaster. I'm not a New Yorker. I'm a Midwesterner. Celebrities are uniting in a new video to reject the NRA and its dangerous agenda. Julianne Moore, Sheryl Crow, among others, getting together to reject the NRA. This is one of those... rapid fire succession, people finishing each other's sentence, repeating the same line, you know, and it goes on. It's a cliche. It is such a cliche. I'm going to play it for you. And if you've eaten something viscous, you might want to not listen to the whole thing, or you're going to throw up a little bit in your mouth. Here's the new PSA.
The mass shooting in Las Vegas has all of us grieving, scared, and angry.
Knowing what to do about it can be confusing. Here's one thing that can make a difference right now.
Right now, that only takes 5 minutes of your time.
All you have to do is text REJECT.
Text REJECT.
REJECT to 644-33. It'll connect you to every town for gun safety.
Slice little email.
I love this. I love the fact that right now this... The entire industry has been shaken to the core by covering up sexual abuse of women for decades, and not just by Harvey Weinstein. I mean, you've got all sorts of other accusers coming forward and saying, I was molested, I was this, I was that. You've got, I've got some audio. Who's the latest? Laura Dern. Laura Dern. She was sexually assaulted as a young teenager.
I woke up and realized that in that space I talked about how I was one of the lucky ones because I was raised by actors who told me their stories and told me what to look out for. And I realized that I was still justifying behavior. And it was my mom who said, no, Laura, that was sexual assault. That was harassment. That was assault. No, you were 14 then. And you realized how in our culture, how we have justified and therefore even condoned behavior as though it's the norm.
And yet they find the wherewithal to, again, step up on a pedestal, look down at you and me, and tell us how to live our lives.
You'll get a call right back from every town for gun safety.
These are the worst people in the world.
Connecting you with your lawmaker giving you guidelines on what to say.
In a moment, you'll be connected to your representative.
And don't be intimidated by making that call.
They're going to give you guidelines on what to say when you call. They're going to tell you what to say, too.
Well, I used to be in Congress. You're going to get voicemail. It's going to be easy. And it'll make a difference.
It can sometimes feel intimidating to make these calls, but it actually couldn't be easier.
Call your rep right now to reject NRA's radical agenda. Reply call.
It can be this simple. Hi, my name is Jack Antonoff.
Sheryl Crow.
Melissa McCarthy.
Anna Deavere Smith.
Adam Scott.
It's Catherine Hahn.
Samuel Harris.
Chanel Maloney.
Zessie Bates.
Cynthia Raleigh.
Julianne Moore.
Moby.
Moby!
Ali Morales.
Laura Dern.
Sunday Adivink Bay. I'm calling from
Brooklyn, New York.
Nashville.
New York City.
Pennsylvania.
Atwater Village.
Atlanta.
Los Angeles. I'm calling.
Okay, all right. I can't take it anymore. I just, wow. After all of this, after the last 2 weeks, they still feel like they have the authority to tell us how to live our lives. Oh, it's just hilarious. Oh, did you hear what John McCain got all over Peter Ducey, Fox News? You know, the senator killed the repeal of Obamacare, and he's already talking about killing the possibility of tax cuts. So he obviously is not getting along too well with the president's agenda. Here is Peter Ducey. He asked the question, has your relationship with the president frayed to the point that you're not going to support anything he comes to you and asks for? Here is the question and McCain's response.
I'm not interested in confronting the president. I'm interested in working with the president.
Thanks very much for your time, sir. I really appreciate it.
Senator McCain, just a quick question. Has your relationship with the president strayed to the point that you are not going to support anything that he comes to you and asks
for? Why would you say something that stupid? Why would you ask something that dumb?
Ow.
Huh? My job as a United States senator is a senator from Arizona, which I was just reelected to. You mean that I am somehow going to behave in a way that I'm going to block everything because of some personal disagreement? That's a dumb question.
Now get off my lawn. Now get off my lawn, you kids and your stupid questions these days. My gosh. This won't surprise you. Unions across the country have donated $765 million to various organizations over the last 4 years. 99% of the cash went to liberal-leaning causes. This is according to the Center for Union Facts. 99%. The data shows that between 2012 and 2016, roughly $240 million went to left-wing political groups. Labor unions gave $77 million to special interest groups and another $13 million to environmental groups, Okay. Kind of interesting. Over $25 billion went to groups like the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the Rainbow Push Coalition. During the same time frame, almost $307 million went to the Democrat Party. This is why we want right to work, kids. Because it allows people who don't want to pay union dues not to pay union dues because they know the damn money's going to go to liberal causes. I mean, I was a member of SAG-AFTRA. I'm sure their money, their political money, went left of center. That's why right to work is there. And the unions have brought it upon themselves. Other groups that received a lot of largesse, Media Matters, the Clinton Foundation, imagine that. And they didn't even have to procure any uranium. Mia Familia Vota, the National Democratic Club, the Advocacy Fund, Progressive Democrats of America, and, of course, Planned Parenthood. Yes. Since 2007, labor unions have given for abortion lobbying fund. And this is the amount of money that's been going for abortion lobbying funding. Teachers union, over a million. You've got the AFSCME, the State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, 520K, International Association of Firefighters, 10 G's, Service, SEIU, 180,000, Plumbers Union, 40,000, Auto Workers Union, 100K. Yeah, you know, not a surprise. Public sector unions, none of that money should go to political causes. None of it should. It's ridiculous. Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. Okay. Oh, there was a magnet school, Jackson, Mississippi. It was named after Jefferson Davis. You know, they're changing the names of Confederate monuments and schools and all, and streets, lots of streets, because, you know. Anyway, predominantly black school. And Jefferson Davis, although infamous in his own right, would probably not be too happy about a diverse school promoting the education of the very individuals he fought to keep enslaved being named after him, according to the PTA president. Okay, you know, I get it. I get it. According to the PTA president, they're going to name it Barack Obama Elementary School. You know, rename the magnet school there. Fully represents ideals and public stances consistent with what we want our children to believe about themselves, including that some Black lives matter, but not the ones in inner cities. That's one thing. And also one of the other ideals is that if you try to leave the Democrat Party, you will be derided and called an Uncle Tom. School will be reportedly the first in the state of Mississippi to be named after Obama and one of very few in the southern United States. By the way, an 18-month investigative audit revealed that Jackson Public Schools, the second largest district in the state, failed to meet 24 out of 32 accreditation standards. As a result, the Mississippi Board of Education requested that the district be declared in the state of emergency. Well, so this changing the name will change everything. You know, things will be cool after that. Things will be cool. Cambridge University, of all places, is giving students trigger warnings for distressing Shakespeare plays. Yeah, academics criticizing trigger warnings because of this. They're saying basically it's an insult. English literature undergrads were apparently cautioned that a lecture focusing on Titus Andronicus and the Comedy of Errors would include discussions of sexual violence and sexual assault. According to the Telegraph, the trigger warnings were posted in the English faculty's notes on lectures document, which is circulated to students at the university. They have expressed concerns that colleges trying to protect young adults from certain issues may render them incapable of dealing with real life when they graduate. Well, no kidding. Supporters of trigger warnings say they serve to help students who may be upset if a text reminds them of a personal traumatic experience. However, critics such as Mary Beard, a professor of classics at Cambridge, says allowing students to avoid learning about traumatic episodes in history and literature is fundamentally dishonest. Well, no excrement, Sherlock. We have to encourage students to be able to face that even when they find they're awkward and difficult for all kinds of good reasons. David Crilly, an artistic director of the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival, says if a student of English literature doesn't know that Titus Andronicus contains scenes of violence, they shouldn't be in the course. This degree of sensitivity will inevitably curtail academic freedom. If the academic staff are concerned they might say something students find uncomfortable, they will do it. It's insulting and it's stupid. And you know what? What the hell? Who the hell needs a trigger warning? What sort of a human being needs a trigger warning? And what the hell is wrong with being triggered? What is wrong with a literature that takes you down an emotional pathway? Literature and plays, these are meant to inspire emotion, create emotion. Dear God in heaven. You know, there's some movies you bawl your eyes out. You watch it anyway. There are some movies, for instance, the movie Seven. That's a movie that I have a real hard time watching. It's a great movie. Hard to watch. It's one of the best movies in the world, the Quentin Tarantino, Inglourious Bastards, Django Unchained. You know, if you can't handle violence and you can't handle uncomfortable themes and you need a trigger warning, you're going to be in a world of damn hurt. That's all I got to tell you. Honestly, trigger warning. What are we setting up this generation for? You've got students that will not hear opposing opinions because conservative speakers are being banned on campus. You've got safe spaces. You've got literally segregation going on campus where black students are being segregated voluntarily. Their own dorms, their own places. What in the hell are we setting up this generation for? It's not unique to the United States. It's happening in Great Britain. It's happening in other places. But what the hell kind of worthless people are we going to be sending out into society after graduating? The world is a vicious and awful place, man. The world is a vicious and awful place. And they're going to be in a world of hurt. My kids are not this way. No safe spaces. No trigger warnings. This is kind of funny. Do not respond to a phone call from a woman screaming for help. If she is saying that she'd been kidnapped, this is a decades-old scam. Apparently, the FBI has warned consumers on its website of a virtual kidnapping scheme where callers lure victims into paying ransoms to free kidnapped family members. My mom had this happen to her, and she was almost ready to wire money because she thought my nephew Matt had been kidnapped, or no, he was in jail in Canada. Now, it turns out these calls are coming from Mexican prisons. According to recent investigation in the agency, the FBI found more than 80 people who fell victims to the scam in California, Minnesota, Idaho, and Texas forked over $87,000 in ransom money. Wow. Wow. This won't surprise you. A new survey finds that 7 in 10 millennials and the younger Gen Z prefer to communicate digitally, most by text message than in person. Researchers at LivePerson, a business solutions provider, polled more than 4,000 young adults between 18 and 34 in a handful of Western nations. 65% of those surveyed indicated they talk to peers more frequently via texting or mobile, but that number is even higher in English-speaking nations. If both the United States and the United Kingdom, about 74% of millennials and Gen Z communicate digitally more frequently with others. As for the tool of choice for digital correspondence, 73% of Americans and 74% of those in the UK prefer text messages. That number dipped to about 69% globally. I would prefer to talk by text. I don't like talking on the phone. Don't particularly care for it. I really don't. I don't. And the cliche about not wanting to call your mom, it's not a cliche. This is kind of funny. 70% of participants said they slept within arm's length of their phone. Okay, I sleep in the guest room frequently because I snore. And I hate to admit this, the phone generally, if it's not on the nightstand, it's in the other space where the other person would normally sleep. Wow. I've said too much. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to bathroom breaks, nearly 66% brought their device with them into the toilet. You got to be careful about the noise you're making in there because you don't want to, do a tell, right? I mean, have you ever done that? You're on the phone and the person on the other, are you in the bathroom? No, Oh, yeah. And by the way, children eight and younger spent about 50 minutes a day staring at a mobile screen in 2013. Now they spend 48 minutes a day, eight and younger. 42% of children 8 and younger now have their own tablet devices, a steep increase from 7% 4 years ago and less than 1% in 2011. If you could have dropped from the year 1990 to today, can you just imagine how bizarre it would be for you? Because in 1990, there were flip phones and they were beginning to be popular. Texting wasn't there. It was phone. You just used it as a phone. Now you come and, I've seen some dramatic changes in the world in the last couple of years. For instance, I moved from Washington, D.C. 2 years ago. Terminal C at Reagan National used to have a couple little restaurants, really crappy, and it's around, it's a round, smaller terminal, and there's a restaurant in the middle of it. Well, I went back there, and now the restaurant in the middle, every single spot, every single table, and the same goes with the other restaurants in the terminal. They all have tablets right in front of the individual diner. Okay, it's not just an order. It's not just the order. And what's really funny because you literally punch in your order, the waiter or waitress or whatever, they don't even bother talking to you. They just walk over behind you, put your food in front of you. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre. And the thing is, you're checking your weather, you're checking your news, you're checking your whatever on this pad. You've got your phone sitting next to you right here, and there's no conversation between you and the person next to you anymore. It doesn't exist. We don't talk. I was sitting next to a woman. I think she was, this might have been in Atlanta. I was flying through. And she was sitting there looking at the the iPad for the restaurant. She had her Kindle open with a book, and she had her cell phone open. And I just made a joke. I don't know what I said. I said, "Why, do you think you're plugged in enough there?" We ended up having a great conversation. It was crazy. But man, the world has changed, hasn't it? It's just weird. Technology can be so great. But you know, when you in the airport again, you nobody looks up. Nobody looks up. They just are staring, and they go to get on that moving sidewalk, and they just have the thing in front of them, and they're sitting in there waiting. And they have the other day, my wife and I went walking. There was a family of four on the Indian Creek Trail in Kansas City, where we live. They all had their phones. They were staring at their phones on this lovely trail. You know, there's this hawk flying by, and there's, you know, the beauty of the flora and the fauna, and they're all looking at their phones. It's straight. And listen, I'm not an old fart tech feared guy. I mean, I built this glorious broadcast studio. I'll show you it sometime. But I built all this myself. And, you know. So I'm not afraid of tech. It just, there's a limit. You'll notice my phone's right here. Let's do a couple of just light things here. I think it's kind of interesting. As far as bang for your buck with regard to profitable actors in Hollywood, listen to this. The most profitable Hollywood actor is not Brad Pitt, Robert Downey Jr., or Dwayne Johnson. Are you ready for this? Somebody we haven't seen in a while, Emilio Estevez, most profitable actor ever. Analyst from Party Casino, a unit of the GVC gaming group. You know GVC, they're a big gaming group. They're gigantic. Found out the young gun star delivered the best return on any top billed male actor who has starred in at least 10 films. Specifically, for every $1 spent on the leading man's films, estimated $6.70 at the box office. That's a pretty big return. The male actors who generated the next best returns were just as surprising. Jean-Claude Van Damme, $1 gets you $4.20. Other great investments were Mel Gibson, $3.50 for every dollar. Tyler Perry, $3 for every $1. God, those Madea movies are stupid and cheap to make. And dear God, I would do the same damn thing if I could make the money he does. I would dress up like an old black woman. Dudley Moore, no longer with us, $3. $3 for every dollar. Listen to this. You want to hear the worst returns? Brad Pitt, 10 cents on every dollar, making him the least profitable actor in Hollywood. Johnny Depp, 20 cents for every dollar. Robert De Niro, 24 cents for every dollar. Hugh Jackman, 25 cents for every dollar. Anthony Hopkins, 26 cents for every dollar. As far as women are concerned, Rose Byrne, I'm not sure who she is, $9.80 for every budgeted dollar. Followed by Regina Hall, $3.50. Octavia Spencer, $2.90. That's because women get paid less, right? Not the case. When it comes to movie genres, mysteries proved to be the most profitable, returning $39.89 for each budgeted dollar over 37 years. That's kind of crazy. Horror flicks had the second with $34.13 for every dollar. Thrillers, $17.36 for every dollar. Documentaries, $7.38. Least profitable. Action films, $1.89 for each dollar, followed by crime pictures, $2.01, and musicals, $2.05 for every dollar. Kind of interesting. This is pretty interesting here. If you're a music aficionado, only 12 songs with the word rock in the title have ever topped the Hot 100 in this country. Okay? Here are the top 10 songs, 11 songs, that have rock in the title that have made the Billboard Hot 100. Here they are. Party Rock Anthem, LMFAO, 2011. Remember that? Rock On, Michael Damian. We've got, what was it? Hey, Kid Rock, Roll, Rock On. Rock Me Amadeus, of course, Falco. I Love Rock and Roll, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. It's Still Rock and Roll to Me, Billy Joel. Rock With You, Michael Jackson, 1980. Rockin' Me. That's Keep On Rockin' Me, Babes. Steve Miller Band, number 5. Rock Me Gently, Andy King. Rock Me Gently, Mark Me Slowly. Rock Your Baby, George McCrae. Don't know that one. That was 1970. Rock Your Baby? I don't know that one. Hughes Corporation, Rock the Boat. Crocodile Rock number one. Kind of fun. And finally, just while we're wasting time here on this Thursday, greatest disaster movies of all time. I like my disaster movies. Number 11 is Airport. Remember Airport? 1970s. Airplane was number 10 on the disaster movies. It's a comedy. Number 9 is a movie called San Francisco. Contagion, 2011, number 8. The Poseidon Adventure, that was a great movie. Number 7, they redid that. It was so god-awful. I was a little boy when that came out. Oh, man, that movie freaked the hell out of me. Melancholia, 2011. It was about people finding out that the small planet was on a collision course with Earth. I never saw that. Miracle Mile, 1988. That was number 5. 1958 movie, A Night to Remember. Titanic, first book I ever read. I think I was in fourth grade. The Birds, number 3. The Towering Inferno, Irwin Allen. He also did Poseidon Adventure. That's number 2. And number 1 disaster movie of all time is Titanic. And the number 1 disaster is the latest installment of the Transformers movies. All right, that's going to do it for me, guys. I want to thank you for joining me today. I want to thank the Podcast Radio Network for carrying the show. I want to thank LibertyOneTV.com for carrying the show on its new time, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and, of course, 6 o'clock Central. Again, if you would, because it's paying the bills, and we're reaching a big audience. My show's pushing 20,000 people watching every episode, and I realize that's small potatoes in the grand scheme of things as far as the nation, but you're watching it. And I hope that I'm informing you, because this is personal here. You're in my home, you're in my studio, and I welcome you, and I want to bring you things that nobody else was bringing. So I hope you're enjoying it. LibertyOneTV.com, LibertyOneTV.com. See right out there? LibertyOneTV.com, 33 cents a day. 33 cents a day, you're going to be helping out the other patriots. And again, conservative speech is being attacked all over the place. It ain't going to be attacked here. We are not backing down. No, sir, we are not backing down. So again, I want to thank you for listening. Make sure to download the podcast. It is on iTunes, iHeartRadio, all the aforementioned media. And if you have an Amazon Alexa, just say, Alexa, play The Rob Carson Show. It'll play the latest edition of The Carson Show podcast. It's up there if you want to write me, carsonontheradio@gmail.com, Facebook, Rob Carson Show, Twitter @RobCarson. Have I said Rob Carson enough? You see, I'm building a brand. Anyway, guys, have a very blessed day, a wonderful Thursday, and I will see you back here next time. Bye.
To The Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook @CarsonShow, on Twitter @RobCarson, and bye-bye. On Instagram. I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.